The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Reach.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Cohen and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Abe Foxman, the National Director of the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League. We'll also have visits from our two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gilbert. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio@Yahoo.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. Too Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Cohen and Too Jewish.
Shalom and Chag Sameach. It's Purim today, the most unbridled, fun, silly Jewish festival of all. I've always loved Purim, both as a kid and as an adult, and have made it a priority for my own congregations over the years to celebrate this holiday with as much joy, energy, and delight as humanly possible. Purim is based on the story told in the book of Esther in the Hebrew Bible, the Tanakh, and quite a tale it is, a royal romance filled with villains and heroes, plotting and intrigue, and the threat of total destruction redeemed only by remarkable plot twists and Jewish heroism. But with all the daring do and drama, with all the court rivalry and devious cunning, the overheard secrets and the thwarted murders, the beauty contest and the harem, with a story complete with queens and a king, walled cities and fabulous banquets, wholesale hangings of bad guys and, well, sex appeal, with the whole Megillah, Purim also has bigger themes of greater importance than just its great story. Actually, the backstory is intriguing in and of itself. The Book of Esther is actually a curious text. It is in the Tanakh, right, but it sometimes seems not to be of the Tanakh. That is, it made it into the Bible, but it sure isn't like anything else in there. For one thing, the leading character in the Bible, God, is never even mentioned in the Book of Esther, not once. For another, it's filled with human intrigue, violence, and horrible plans to destroy the Jews. And for once, the Jews win. Interestingly, the whole first chapter of the Book of Esther has no Jews present at all. It's set in the court of the Persian Empire, a drunken and debauched place from its depiction here. Actually, it sounds kind of like a Charlie Sheen party. And then things go downhill. This is clearly not the Book of Proverbs. And then there's the curious matter of Mordechai, hero of the Purim story, passing off his own niece as a non-Jew so that she can marry the Persian king, going against all Jewish tradition. In fact, identity throughout this piece is often concealed or changed. Esther, the heroine of the tale and the namesake of the book, is also called Hadassah. This is quite unusual. The only other woman in the Bible that I can think of who was given a second name is Sarah, and her real name was Sarai. Hardly different at all. But here the principal female character has two distinctly different names, two faces, two identities. One Jewish, that is Hadassah, a Hebrew name. The other not Jewish, originally that is, Esther, a pagan origin name. It's an acknowledgement that Purim is about the dual identities of Jews living in non-Jewish countries. No wonder we dress up in costumes and masks on Purim. But wait, there's more. While the Jewish God is never mentioned, the names of the leading Jewish characters in the Book of Esther actually parallel the names of the principal pagan gods of Babylon. Marduk, the city god of Babylon, sounds just like Mordechai, the Jewish hero. And Ishtar, the pagan fertility goddess for both Babylon and Canaan, is just like Esther. So in the Purim story itself, Marduk and Ishtar outwit Haman and the dim-witted Persian king Artaxerxes. Not terribly Jewish, is it? And there's more. Ishtar Esther is the goddess of beauty, sex, and war. And there is plenty of all of these in the Book of Esther. In fact, Ishtar is the model for the goddesses Astarte, Aphrodite, and Venus in other cultures. None of them exactly nice Jewish girls, unless you think Paris Hilton is a nice Jewish girl. And then there's the plot and the way it all works itself out. Esther is chosen for the king's harem solely because of her beauty and under completely false pretenses. The king doesn't even know she's a Jew. She successfully hides that identity until the climactic moment of the story, and only then reveals it after her arm is pretty fully twisted by Mordechai, so that she'll consent to try to save the Jews. Mordechai himself is a conniving, manipulative advisor who tricks the king into marrying Esther, eavesdrops on other royal aides and rats them out, arrogantly refuses to bow to a higher-ranked courtier and nearly gets all the Jews killed for his chutzpah, and then Mordechai is forced to outmaneuver and connive just to save the lives of the co-religionists he endangered. And then, in a bloodbath at the conclusion of the Megillah, a happy bloodbath at that, the Jews slaughter all the Persians who try to kill them, and instead of being killed and robbed, they go ahead and kill and confiscate the goods of the Persians. And we read this to children and make them learn it and chant it as well? Oy vey! You can easily make a case that the setting of Esther and the characters and the values involved make it the least Jewish book in the Bible. And yet, there is also something uniquely Jewish about Purim, the tale of Jews surviving and even thriving in the face of terrible antagonism and undeserved hatred. In a way, the Book of Esther and the holiday of Purim are about the challenges and seductions of living in a rich and dangerous non-Jewish culture, of the temptations and terrors of assimilation and anti-Semitism. While most of the Bible takes place in Israel, Jews in a Jewish land, Purim is about Jews in a non-Jewish land, strangers in a strange land, in Moses' famous phrase, how we learn to live and thrive and fight and survive in countries where some people, like Haman, will just hate us for our success or our uniqueness. Others will try to seduce us away from our Jewish identities and beliefs. Purim is actually about what it is meant to be Jewish most of the time throughout history, and what it still can mean today. These issues haven't disappeared, nor have our tangled responses to them. What Esther still teaches us, what Purim makes us reconsider, is that we need to find our own ways to be Jewish and to successfully celebrate our complex identities in this culture, too. Like Esther herself, we need to find ways to reclaim our Jewish identities. Like Mordechai, we need to come to terms with our successes and failures in our own societies and translate those into ways in which we can help our people, the Jewish people, and preserve our identities and our practices, and of course, our lives. Purim is not really about the Persian Empire 2,500 years ago. It's about being Jewish today, right now, right here, wherever we live, in this moment, on this day, on Purim itself. And so to celebrate Purim and to play us in this morning, here's Michael Isaacson's song for Purim, Esther the Queen.
Let us remember with true emotion, let us pay homage to Esther the Queen, and rekindle the ember of true devotion. Esther, we give you our blessed esteem. Let us honor the day that we set for Purim, honor the story and all it can mean, for the valorous way that she saved our people, honor the glory of Esther the Queen. We know Haman, foe of Israel, plotted a slaughter. Each son and daughter soon would fall. But Esther sought the king, Ahasuerus. She stood before him, proud and tall, saved us all. Nations may flourish on high ambition, only to weaken and pass from the scene. But the Hebrews will nourish their strong tradition, always protecting, always reflecting, always perfecting, lest we forget that we yet are indebted to Esther. Lest we forget that we yet are indebted to Esther. Lest we forget that we yet are indebted to Esther the Queen. Esther the Queen!
That was Esther the Queen by Michael Isaacson for Purim today, Chag Sameach. Speaking of anti-Jewish action and anti-Semitism, as Purim really does, when we come back on Too Jewish, we'll meet the man who deals with anti-Semitism more directly and effectively than anyone else in the country, and quite possibly the world. He's Abe Foxman, the National Director of the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL. He's one of the most important and controversial public Jewish figures in America, and he has been so for over 40 years. Find out why when we come back with Abe Foxman on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. You know, most of the time I'm talking about the great pizza we serve at Mama's, but not today. Nope. Today I want to tell you about our calzones. A calzone is kind of like a stuffed pizza. It's made of dough wrapped around whatever ingredients you want, like pepperoni, mushrooms, or even artichoke hearts. There's lots of cheese inside, and it's served with a cup of marinara sauce. Our calzones are huge. We had a guy order two of them over the phone, and when he picked them up, he couldn't believe it. There were only two people eating, and two large calzones feed 6 to 8 people easy. You know, it wouldn't hurt you to try a calzone next time you're in. Then, if they get real popular, we might have to change our name to Mama's Calzones. Mama's Pizza, 4500 East Speedway in the Midway Business Park, on east side of 22nd and Colb and back at the Fry Shopping Center, on the north side at the southwest corner of Oracle and McGee, and on newest at Broadway and Houghton. Now repeat after me, Mama's Pizza.
Tucson Hebrew Academy, THA, is an independent school for children from kindergarten through 8th grade. It has a long track record of academic excellence and unparalleled integrated general and Judaic studies curriculum, with a variety of music and fine arts classes combined with its award-winning sports programs. THA nourishes students in body, mind, and spirit. The atmosphere in the classroom encourages self-assured self-expression, critical thinking, and respect for diverse points of view. THA's low student-teacher ratio allows its highly qualified faculty to provide instruction based on the most up-to-date proven research methods in science, technology, math, and literature. Tucson Hebrew Academy students understand the relevance of Jewish values in the modern world. THA sees learning as a way of life and builds a strong sense of community. They're enrolling now. Please give your child the gift of a THA education. For more information on how to enroll your child or to schedule a tour, call 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. That's 529-3888. We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish Abe Foxman, the National Director of the Anti-Defamation League, known throughout the world as a leader in the fight against anti-Semitism, prejudice, bigotry, and discrimination. Foxman was the National Director of the ADL since 1987, although he's worked for them since 1965. Before that, becoming National Director, he worked in the League's International Affairs and Civil Rights Divisions. His background and experience have helped to keep the ADL not only relevant, but very important on the national and international scene. How does it feel to have worked for one organization since Lyndon Johnson was president?
The answer is I really don't know. I don't know what to compare it. not having, you know, done anything but in one place. I feel very privileged. I feel very lucky to have had an opportunity to do what I do every single day for 45 years. So I'm not complaining, not looking back, and I don't know what the other side of the horizon in terms of job responsibilities would be. So,
Anti-Semitism was a huge issue in American life, has been for a long time. ADL was founded in 1913 in the wake of the Leo Frank lynching in Georgia. It has seemed to me, just in my lifetime, that the kind of anti-Semitism the ADL was so involved in fighting has diminished in America over the course of particularly the last 30 years or so. Is that false?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. It has diminished. I think bigotry in general has diminished. I came on right at the turn of the Civil Rights Movement when we were beginning to enact legislation against segregation and racial discrimination. There's been a major change attitudinally in the United States, and that impacted on one of the bigotries that's part of the landscape, which is anti-Semitism. When I came to the ADL in 65, and we were taking the pulse of the disease in this country, almost one out of three Americans was infected with anti-Semitism. Most recently in a polls, it's down to about 12% to 14%, which is good news. On the other hand, that means 30, 40 million Americans are still seriously infected with the disease of anti-Semitism.
We will talk much more with Abe Foxman, the head of the Anti-Defamation League, when we come back this morning on Too Jewish.
If your parents or other loved ones are in need of assisted living, consider making the choice that Dorothy Daniels' family made, Handmaker.
Living at Handmaker does make me feel very independent, like I was still in my house. The best part of it is I don't have to clean it.
Assisted living at Handmaker promotes an active and independent life. All needs are met, including weekly housekeeping and linen service, transportation to doctor's appointments, restaurants, banks, and shopping. And living at Handmaker is fun.
Every 2 weeks, there is a man who comes with a saxophone, and we dance, and I love that because I love to dance.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grant, and includes 1 and 2 bedroom suites and cozy studios with patios and balconies.
I would recommend Handmaker to anyone because I feel very safe and secure here. The people that work here are very nice, considerate, and that means a lot.
For a tour and consultation, call 322-7035 or visit their website at handmaker.org. Not just music, but the hills are alive with the sound of Purim. The most thoroughly fun Jewish holiday of all is coming to Temple Emmanuel in the greatest show yet. Sunday, March 20th at 10 a.m., the Purim Extravaganza Show and Spectacular Carnival will make this fabulously fun festival into a wonderful celebration for all ages. It's the Sound of Purim, a wonderful parody of The Sound of Music, exploring the story of the Book of Esther in full musical theater style, including takeoffs of all the classic songs from Do Adir to My Favorite Thing, in a spirit of humor, fun, and flat-out silliness. It's a Purim day filled with comedy, clowning, magic, games, fabulous food, don't miss the finest hamantaschen in all of Arizona, and carnival celebration. Everyone's invited, and the Purim show and entrance to the carnival are absolutely free. Call 327-4501 for more information. Come one, come all to the biggest and best Purim celebration in Arizona, all at Temple Emmanuel, Sunday, March 20th at 10 a.m. Call 327-4501 for Purim Extravaganza Fun for adults and children.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or kvel, please email us at toojewishradio@yahoo.com, T-O-O Jewish Radio, or call 520-327-4501, or visit our website at toojewishradio.com. You can also get CDs of past and present shows through the website, or downloading us from there at the Apple iTunes Store as podcast, to which you can subscribe. You know, with all the ridiculous stories out about Charlie Sheen in recent weeks, there's one that hasn't been told much. The guy that Sheen went after in such a public way, the man he called by his Hebrew name of Chaim Levine, is one Chuck Lorre, nowhere near as well known as the nutcase Sheen, but far more creative and successful. Chuck Lorre is a Jewish guy from New York who's created a string of critically and publicly successful, actually wildly successful, TV series, including Grace Under Fire, Sybil, Dharma and Greg, 2 and a Half Men, The Big Bang Theory, and a new comedy series, Mike and Molly. In fact, You can kind of make a case for Chuck Lorre being the Norman Lear of this generation. He's 58 years old nowadays, and the most successful developer of sitcoms going today. Charlie Sheen's wild and vicious attacks on Chuck Lorre led to the end of Two and a Half Men's run as the number one show on network TV. But don't cry for Lorre, because The Big Bang Theory, his other show, is the second-rated show on TV. And he gets to make the syndication money for Two and a Half Men, which will only be much higher with all the publicity out about Charlie Sheen. Oh, and Chuck Lorre has something else going for him. He isn't talking publicly about Charlie Sheen, and so he doesn't have to respond to all the insanity that is emanating from that source. It's Purim today, and in honor of the most fun and silly of all Jewish festivals, here's the national Jewish sensation, the Maccabees, the Yeshiva University mostly a cappella group, singing their Purim version of Pink's song, Raise Your Glass.
Stand for a tale so grand. Shushan is the place where it all began, the hidden miracle. One man, second in command, slay all the Jews with his wicked plan, a scheme so miserable. He chose a day for the disaster. It's ironic what came after. He didn't know a girl named Esther would turn it upside down. So raise your glass if you can see the hidden meaning. It's right in front of you. We will never be, never be anything but proud to tell the story. Then queen, cause God was pulling strings from behind the scenes. She wore the royal crown. 3 days the Jews just prayed. Queen Esther risked her life, went to save the day. She took Haman down. The streets were filled with celebration. Everyone ate Haman Tashin. Jubilation for the nation. Kainti Elamu.
That was the Maccabees tune for Purim today. We welcome our maven on Israel, the director of the Israel Center, Guy Gelbart. Good morning, Guy. Chag Purim Sameach.
Purim Sameach. I don't know how much did you have to drink, but I drank enough until here, so it might be a silly talk today.
Here, have a Hamantashen. It'll help.
Oh, thank you.
In America, Purim is primarily celebrated, really most of the time, at synagogue with the chanting of the Megillah, lots of hilarity, we do a big show, there's music, there's a carnival. In Israel, somewhat the same, but somewhat different. Tell us what the differences are.
Well, I think the main difference is that most of the celebrations in Israel take place at schools, and the most fun thing to do in Israel on Purim morning, is to go near the schools. And you see all those kids come with their costumes. You see the Queen of Esther, and then another Queen of Esther, and another Queen of Esther. And they're all going, you know, to the school. Usually the costume is something of Disney or something, but transferred to be Queen of Esther.
Right.
And it's very fun. And then you see Superman arrives, and then you see Hosni Mubarak maybe arrive. And, you know, you see all those little kids dressed up with all those weird costumes. And it's so much fun. And it's so joyful. In a way, it reminds a little bit of Halloween here at the States. Only it's in morning time and not at night. And there is a difference with what we refer to as the Mishloach Manot, the giving of candy. In Purim, especially in Israel, you give candies to anybody.
Right.
While here in Halloween, the kids are going and collecting the candies.
Here, they're giving it away as gifts. It's a really interesting thing. It's also in Purim, of course, there's this notion of matanot levyonim. You know, you're supposed to give gifts to the poor as well as give gifts of hamantash and fruit, that is osnei haman, candies, nuts to your friends. So it's really a generosity, not just give me all the good stuff.
Exactly. There is a big aspect of generosity in it. Another part of Purim is focused on the adult audience, and that's the part of, you know, especially the more religion communities tend to drink a lot. And after they drink a lot, they celebrate, and they dance in the middle of the street, and they dance in the middle of town. And it's really a crazy time. You can go and see suddenly, you know, on a main road, the road is blocked because a group of 10 Hasidim are dancing there, and everybody, you know, are joyful and happy with it because it's Purim. You know, it's legitimate. It's Purim. You need to have fun.
I always say that even God needs a good party once a year.
That's true. I might invite him to you know, visit us on Purim. That's interesting. Never thought of it.
Well, that's the whole point.
What disguise would he come?
Well,
what
I think
costume?
God comes to our Purim celebration at Temple Emmanuel, to be perfectly honest. But, you know, I wouldn't want to exaggerate or anything on Purim.
Well, I'm sure you're having a great party.
We are, Guy. Purim Sameach, a great Purim for you and for your family.
Thank you. Same here.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the great restaurateur Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant J Bar in Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
It is the prettiest time of year now, isn't it?
It's J Bar time. Time to sit outside on the porch, get a margarita. I didn't tell you this. We just won best margaritas in Tucson at J Bar. Sit outside, have a margarita, serve some great food. Be thankful you live here in Southern Arizona.
It is a wonderful time of year. What's special on the menu now?
Well, right now, all our food from the farmers are coming in. So peas and pea shoots and carrots and radishes and citrus. So all of those things are finding their way on the menu in preparations with trout and rabbit and beef and duck. Great fun foods of the region. Great flavors. Great time to be there.
Boy, I'm hungry and thirsty just hearing about it. What's the phone number?
615-6100.
And it's www.janos.com.
Rabbi, you always know how to find me.
And I love to. Thanks, Janos.
Thank you, Rabbi.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in Southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You know, we've been talking about the Arab world and democracy now for a few weeks, and the potential for democracy. One of the most famous and painful democratic elections took place in Germany, the time of the Weimar Republic, when the new chancellor became Adolf Hitler, who was publicly and freely elected. They didn't win the majority vote that time, but they had the largest party, and Hindenburg invited him to form the government. And then, you know, he was reelected in a landslide. So democracy doesn't always mean you get the guy you want.
Right. And, you know, there's lots of examples in literature and in history of be careful what you wish for. I mean, when I worked for the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, back in Vienna before I moved to Tucson, one of the things we spent a lot of time and money on was monitoring elections in the former communist world. And we did all these things to make sure that the elections were technically free and fair, that they were kosher in every possible way. But I had come from previous experience in Pakistan, where the OSCE wasn't active, but the international community was, in monitoring elections in exactly the same way. And there are all these guidelines you follow. And there are real international experts who are like, you know, appraisers for Sotheby's or Christie's who go out and appraise elections.
I remember being in Israel, actually, when they were doing elections at the West Bank and Gaza, and Jimmy Carter was spending a lot of time in East Jerusalem,
right,
you know, monitoring stuff.
Right. So one of the things I learned in Pakistan is that the election can be totally free and above board. But in a country which is desperately poor, where the rural literacy rate is less than 10% and among women less than 1%, you can basically buy the votes of a whole village for a loaf of bread. Well, they're votes, they're freely cast, but they're basically bought votes. And you can sway people who don't know very much, who have no access to print media, who in the past at least had no access to internet or TV. And the form of free and fair elections doesn't mean much in the absence of a certain standard of living, a certain rate of literacy, a certain degree of civil society, which to a very great extent is missing in much of the Arab world. Now, what's interesting is the one place where it's not so missing is Egypt, which has a strong intellectual and educational tradition. Lots of Egyptians have been educated abroad. They speak at least one foreign language, if not two or three. I mean, Egyptian urbanites and the middle class, even the young lower middle class who are highly educated, are a pretty impressive bunch. And there's reason to hope that they might make some good choices. But as one op-ed piece in the New York Times recently put it, is this Tehran in 1979 or Berlin in 1989? In other words, should we lament we've lost Egypt the way we lost Iran, or should we applaud that the West has gained an ally in terms of democracy and freedom and human rights, at least potentially, if we do our part right, if we handle it and we're supportive of the right groups and the right processes, if we send people on educational exchanges? I mean, this could take a while. I don't think Egyptians are going to make the right choices nationally in the course of the next 2 weeks, 2 months, or 2 years. But what about the next two generations?
Well, one can hope. I just remember being in Egypt, and the one street, the main street, was gorgeous and elegant, and I went running two blocks off the main street. People were living in hovels, and other people were living in tombs. So the educated elite and even the educated impoverished elite are not the majority of the Egyptians, and I think the Muslim Brotherhood has as much sway there as anybody in that. Those are Islamists.
Yeah, so, and why do they have so much sway?
Because of the extreme... I don't know if it's just corruption or the fact that the whole... There is plenty of corruption, but it's a basket case of a country economically. No, there's 78 million
people.
They give
people food and shelter,
right,
which
exactly.
is the job of a government. So
correct.
If the government does its job correctly,
right,
people can rally around the government and not against some extremists.
Right. It's just such a big if. I hope you're right. I hope it works that way. God willing, or inshallah, we should say.
From your lips to God's ears.
That's it. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
Look forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. One day a gorgeous woman gets on the bus, clearly distraught, and sits down next to a guy. She is visibly upset and finally can contain herself no longer. She turns to the guy and says, "I just saw my therapist, and he says I have a big problem." "Well, what's the problem?" the guy asks. And she says, "I can't tell you. I don't even know you." And the guy says, "Well, look, sometimes it's good to tell your problems to a perfect stranger on a bus." The girl says, "Well, my therapist just told me I'm a nymphomaniac, and I only like Jewish cowboys." "By the way, now that you know, my name is Susan." And the guy says, "Howdy, Susan. My name is Bucky Goldstein." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you on Purim and other days, so you should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week's portion is third in the book of Leviticus, Shmini, and it includes a very dramatic and traumatic event. The tabernacle in the wilderness has just been consecrated to the priests. Moses' brother Aaron and his sons are entering into their office. God's presence fills the tabernacle, and all is right with the people. And then, suddenly, disaster strikes. Aaron's eldest sons, newly ordained priests named Nadav and Avihu, offer what is called Esh Zarah, strange fire, to the Lord. They are immediately struck down and devoured by divine flames, dying before the Lord. In the aftermath of this tragic shock, Moses consoles Aaron with strange words. God says, "By those brought near to me, I am consecrated, bikravai ekadesh, and honored before the people." There is no word on whether Aaron accepted this as a just ending for his sons. The text merely says, "Vayidom Aharon." Aaron was silent. We do not know the young priest's offense, if there was any. We are not told what the strange fire was. God decrees atonement offerings are made for whatever sin the young men may have committed. The people are restored to God's favor. There is no further explanation in the Torah, although the rabbis create a variety of possible explanations for the disaster. Maybe the young men were drinking, or they offered sacrifices that weren't ordered by God, or they were actually engaged in idolatry, or they were too arrogant. They usurped their dad's place. But the truth is, we don't know why they died. Of course, that's not just true in Torah. We also do not know why certain tragedies take place in our own lives, why terrible things happen to good people, whether it's a tsunami in Japan or the death of an innocent. As Ben Sirach says in the text Ecclesiasticus from the Apocrypha of the Hebrew Bible, we have been shown more than we can understand. God simply keeps his own rationale private. We just don't know and likely won't. So what do we know? We do know that Aaron's silence may be the only real response to profound tragedy and loss. Our own comfort and consolation may come only when we silently acknowledge our own powerlessness. This may seem small comfort indeed, but it is also an honest appraisal of our ability to comprehend profound loss. May God protect us from tragedy, but may God also give us the strength of Aaron when we have to face it, the ability to accept the painful inadequacy of our own explanations with dignity and courage. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll talk with Abe Foxman, the controversial and effective head of the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, about what we should be worried about today and what we don't really need to worry about anymore. Find out when we return on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Last week, Israel intercepted a ship from Syria, theoretically bound for Egypt, and captured a massive arms shipment intended, actually, for Hamas in Gaza to be used in terror attacks on Israel. The huge shipment of weapons the Israeli Navy captured from the Victoria ship proves Hamas's violent intentions, as if there were any doubt. Israel laid out an assortment of missiles and mortars at the Ashdod port in southern Israel alongside the ship they commandeered in international waters in the Mediterranean, in full accordance, by the way, with international maritime law. The ship was on its way from Syria with weapons meant for Hamas in Gaza. Among the weapons on board were advanced anti-ship missiles that could have altered the region's balance of power by impeding Israel's ability to enforce its naval blockade of the Hamas-controlled Gaza Strip. Military officials said Iran possesses the type of weapons found on board. They released images of instruction manuals in Farsi, that is Persian, and said there were other clues that explicitly show Iranian involvement. Every day, Iran, Syria, Hezbollah, Hamas, and other terrorist elements are making efforts to smuggle weapons into Lebanon and Gaza, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said after inspecting the weaponry. All those who question why Israel must stop and inspect ships en route to Gaza can find the answer right here in Ashdod. They were en route to terror organizations in Gaza, but their ultimate target was the Israeli civilian population. To get around its naval blockade, Israel says Hamas routinely ships arms to Egypt and then smuggles them across the largely lawless Sinai Peninsula into neighboring Gaza through a network of tunnels under the 9-mile border. In related developments, Turkey's government forced an Iranian cargo plane to land in its territory to search for an alleged cargo of arms from Iran to Syria, and Egyptian forces seized 5 vehicles carrying weapons into the country from Sudan, again headed for Gaza. Officials said the trucks were carrying large quantities of mortars, rocket-propelled grenades, rifles, and explosives. In other news from Israel, also not so good, a horrific terrorist attack in the town of Itamar in the West Bank murdered a father, mother, and 3 young children last week. Israeli police are searching for the terrorists who perpetrated this vile act. Rabbi Udi Fogel, his wife Ruth Fogel, both in their 30s, and their sons Yoav, 11 years old, Elad, 4 years old, and Hadas, a 3-month-old baby, were stabbed in the heart and then had their throats cut. 2 other boys were sleeping in a nearby room and woke up to find their parents and brothers brutally slaughtered. Apparently, the attackers missed them. When discovered, the 2-year-old brother was sobbing and trying to wake his murdered parents. Faced with a moral outcry over the atrocities, a variety of Palestinian terror organizations have denied responsibility. But that was not the reaction on the Palestinian street. There, in the West Bank and in Gaza, there was rejoicing, singing, and candies were passed out, according to news reports. In the Gaza city of Rafah, where Palestinian residents handed out candy and sweets on the streets, a resident described the celebrations as a natural response to the harm settlers inflict on the Palestinian residents of the West Bank. My God. Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas last week condemned the murder in Itamar, telling Israel Radio that it was a despicable, immoral, and inhuman act. Abbas's office had already issued a condemnation of the murder, but it was not in his own voice, and the language was not as emphatic. A human being is not capable of something like that, Abbas said in the interview. Scenes like these, the murder of infants and children and a woman slaughtered, cause any person endowed with humanity to hurt and to cry. Unfortunately, other Palestinian leaders, including Palestinian Prime Minister Salim Fayyad, were wishy-washy in spite of the horrible truth and all the photos. Fayyad said he objected to all acts of violence, but implied the incident in Itamar may not have been a terror attack. No, it was a courtesy visit. Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad al-Malki went much further. He said no Palestinian had ever murdered an infant or civilians in such a manner, either for nationalist causes or in revenge, which raises doubts regarding Israel's haste to accuse the Palestinians. Well, we will follow the search for these brutal criminals who perpetrated this horror. And unfortunately, that's the news of Jews around the world. We're delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Abraham Foxman is the national director of the Anti-Defamation League, a position he has held since 1987. He's worked for the ADL since 1965. He is an important voice against anti-Semitism and an important supporter of the State of Israel. Abe, I want you to tell us a little bit about your background. I didn't know it until I was preparing for this interview, but you survived as an infant as a Polish Catholic child. So can you fill us in a little on that?
Well, I was born in the wrong time at the wrong place for a Jewish kid. I was born in Poland during World War II. I survived through miracles. My parents survived. My parents tried to stay ahead of the Germans. Moving east, the Germans caught up with our family in Lithuania, in the city of Vilna. And when the order went out for the Jews to report to the ghetto, I had a nanny, a Polish Catholic nanny, who then offered that she would take care of me. My parents had, nobody had an idea that the war would be 4 years, made a decision they could, Rabbi, never really explained to me, but it turned out to be a decision not only saved my life, but saved their lives. So we separated, she baptized me, hid me, risked her life every single day for 4 years. To protect me. My parents survived, came back to look for me, found each other, and we were then reunited it was a bittersweet ending because he then said I belonged to her in the Catholic Church, so we had a custody battle. But regardless, it was her heroism, her courage, her passion, her faith that saved my life and indirectly saved my parents' lives. And so, Rabbi, for me to have the privilege, the opportunity to do what I do every day is very, very special.
It's a stunning story, very powerful. I want to shift to some of the work of the ADL. We talked earlier in the show about the diminished sort of social anti-Semitism, the casual anti-Semitism that was so much a part of American life, and then some of the serious job discrimination, housing discrimination used to exist that isn't so much around anymore. There is an increasing perception that there's a great danger from Islamic anti-Semitism. Is this an accurate reflection of what's going on now?
Yeah, I would say if you ask me where is the greatest threat to Jewish survival, Jewish future, Jewish continuity, aside from assimilation and all the sociological issues, it's from radical Islam. Today, the majority of Jewish people in the world reside in Israel. And the greatest threat to the existence, if you will, of the state of Israel comes from countries such as Iran, who in an effort to obtain nuclear weapons don't hesitate twice a week to proclaim that their purpose is to erase from the map the Jewish state, to destroy the Jewish state, etc. Then there are other countries. Not countries, but entities such as Hamas and Hezbollah, who have sworn in their constitutions and in their documents of existence, anti-Semitism, the destruction of not only Israel, but the Jewish people. Now, while we celebrate the coming of democracy in Egypt, there is this joint anxiety that the Jewish people fear, and that is if democracy will lead to the Muslim Brotherhood taking over Egypt. The Muslim Brotherhood is anti-Semitic in addition to being anti-Israel. It's part of their belief system. In Europe today, while there's still the old classic anti-Semitism of the right, much of the anti-Semitism in the left is imported transmitted by a conveyor belt of radical Muslim immigrants in France, in Germany, in Holland, wherever, who have added a dimension of anti-Semitism in Europe that we haven't seen since World War II. So from that perspective, yeah, the greatest anti-Semitic threat comes from what can be described as radical, fundamentalist, or extreme Islam.
You have worked with U.S. presidents. Let's see, the list includes, I guess it goes all the way back to Nixon, Ford, Carter, Reagan, Bush, Clinton, George W. Bush, Obama. A fair amount has come out now about just how anti-Semitic Nixon was in private. Were any of the others, did any of the others share those kinds of views?
Yeah, we've learned recently to our chagrin that Truman was an anti-Semite. Mm-hmm. His diaries, I think that shocked us. I think nothing should shock us, but it still does. Billy Graham, who was the confessor, if you will, of all these presidents that you mentioned, when he was revealed as the anti-Semite that he was. Now, here is the spiritual guide for so many presidents, Democrat and Republican, who is an avowed, ugly anti-Semite. So, that was troubling. But I think nobody to the extent of Nixon, nobody to the extent that, we learned about Nixon's antipathy. And yet the irony there, he stood up for Israel, not because of love of Jews, but because he felt it was in the best interest of the United States. And his anti-Semitism didn't undermine that interest. It's sad. It's sad that the highest office of the land was so frequently infected by that disease.
One last question. You know, in the recent Tucson shooting, Sarah Palin came out and said that because the website she had, which had a gun sites on it, one of them was Gabby Gifford's district, she said that she had been accused of a blood libel. A lot of people were highly exercised about that. How did you feel?
Well, we had mixed feelings. We were not as exercised. We felt that she had a right to feel angry and to defend herself, and that... you know, the word blood libel has a much broader connotation today than it does in the Jewish lexicon. So we, on one hand, we said she had a right to defend herself, and she used the term in the broadest sense, but we had wished that she had found another term because it would have dealt with this whole issue in a different perspective. So while understanding, It focused on this rather than on the subject which needed discussion and debate, and that is to what extent does excessive political rhetoric, lack of respect, lack of civility contribute to the tragedies that certainly we experienced in Tucson. It's a legitimate debate. Pointing fingers doesn't always, become a teaching lesson, and this was a teaching opportunity. And a lot more was, like when Sarah Palin says good morning, it upsets some people. That was part of it, so.
I want to thank Abe Foxman for a great visit on Too Jewish. You can go to the ADL website, find out all kinds of information about their work. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rabbi.
You be well, too. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
Not just music, but the hills are alive with the sound of Purim. The most thoroughly fun Jewish holiday of all is coming to Temple Emmanuel in the greatest show yet. Sunday, March 20th at 10 a.m., the Purim Extravaganza Show and Spectacular Carnival will make this fabulously fun festival into a wonderful celebration for all ages. It's the Sound of Purim, a wonderful parody of The Sound of Music, exploring the story of the Book of Esther in full musical theater style, including takeoffs of all the classic songs from Doa Deer to My Favorite Thing, in a spirit of humor, fun, and flat-out silliness. It's a Purim day filled with comedy, clowning, magic, games, fabulous food, don't miss the finest hamantaschen in all of Arizona, and carnival celebration. Everyone's invited, and the Purim show and entrance to the carnival are absolutely free. Call 327-4501 for more information. Come one, come all to the biggest and best Purim celebration in Arizona, all at Temple Emmanuel, Sunday, March 20th at 10 a.m. Call 327-4501 for Purim Extravaganza Fun for adults and children.
We all deal with deadlines. April 15th is one we all know. This year, through a change in the Arizona legislature's tuition tax credit, you can still get your tax credit for donating to Tucson Hebrew Academy through April 15th on your 2010 taxes. Now you have an extended opportunity. Ensure Tucson Hebrew Academy has resources to provide financial aid to its needy families. This is both an honor and a privilege to support Tucson's only Jewish day school. Your gift of up to $1,000 for a couple or $500 for single filers to JETCO, the organization that supports scholarships at Tucson Hebrew Academy, the kindergarten at Anshe Israel, and the Tucson Jewish Community Center Kindergarten, all of that will get you a dollar-for-dollar tax credit on your state taxes. JETCO Money provides financial assistance only to qualified students. Talk to your tax professional, like always. In order to make the donation to THA and JETCO, go to jetco.org, JETCO.org, or call 647-8442. It's a good thing to do.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be Martin Fletcher, the well-known NBC correspondent and author of the fine book, Walking Israel. Our playout this morning comes from an unusual and lovely Purim song, a Canson d'Esther, from the Jews of Carpentras, France, as sung by the Boston Camerata. My friends, have a Chag Purim Sameach, a happy holiday of Purim, and a Shavua Tov, a good week, a week, we pray, of peace.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.